Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic.
We are the islands of a human archipelago. We are two, mother and child. Then we are one. But soon, in most places, we are one of many, a part of the many, scattered over a rocky outcrop. Time is a landscape. Here and there, a few place names, like keys placed on light-sensitive paper. Bright day, strong shadow.
Somebody that I've always, you know, admired and who has become a dear friend is Teju. In many ways, because his work traversed many divides, you know, from his literary works like Open City and Every Day for the Thief. And I thought this was an important moment to think about working together, lending one's own abilities within their own medium, but also trying to find a means by which to create a dialogue, a community, and a nurturance of two modes of approaching. Arguably, Teju and I, our work has very much been in consideration of marginalized communities and often addressing, you know, refugee communities, political rancoring, immigration and the like. And that was really the very early genesis of a conversation between us. And we found a means by which to gesture with a degree of grace towards one another. In other words, to compromise, to see the strength and the beauty in the other person's overture, and then to adjust ourselves toward that trajectory or that passage.
I think the approach suggested itself in part because, you know, what started happening from 2016, even beginning with the presidential election, was that we started to see the centering of this individual. It was this idea of a kind of extreme American exceptionalism, but also in his person, it was all about ego, me, mine, only I can solve it. And artists are always looking for the right language to confront what is in the world. And I think it felt necessary to us at that particular moment and in the years following that our language had to be something that was actually minimizing the role of ego and of one person having a solution, right? So that the project emerged as, sure, Fuzzle's photos, but photos of others in their lives, in their dignity. My texts are things that I wrote, but the project is so intertextual and brings in citations and many other people's voices and how they've been thinking about this.
We started in a certain mode wherein we thought we could map out logically the sort of cadence of the book, but then we would let some time pass and Teju would step away and have time of reflection and thinking about writing. And I hope you don't mind if I share that story, Teju, but what I found extremely touching was an inordinate amount of time went by, which is customary with Teju, and particularly if you correspond with him on email. But many months went by, and Teju quite loves Zurich, where I live much of the time. And he happened to be here one afternoon, and he was coming to dinner. And I had sort of thought, well, you know, we have to let the project go because I don't like the notion of putting pressure on another. And then just before he was coming to my home for the dinner, he said, oh, you know, I've been thinking about something. I'm going to send you this document. Maybe you'd like to take a look at it. And it was extraordinary. There before me were 108 exquisite passages. You know, there are very few, I think, that we return to or that we edited. We edited out maybe a handful of them. In the face of all of this, in the presence of these faces? Are words necessary?
I was very conscious while writing of the fact that Fazal is a slow photographer. And as I got to know him better, I realized that it was actually slower than I realized. He's often photographing with a large or unwieldy camera. That's why those images are so gorgeous. But there was more to it than that. And I came to find out that sometimes he will meet people and go weeks without photographing them. And this is somebody that he knows he wants to photograph. Specifically in his portraits of displaced peoples, I saw such an infinite patience that it came to seem to me like the diametric opposite of grabbing something so that you can put it into your newspaper and say, it's a pity that's happening to them over there, without taking any responsibility for your government's role in what's happening to them, and so on and so on. His images refuse all of that. His images are like looking at a person who's asking you a question. And then I just sort of had to sit down and say, how do I accompany such images? You know, and that just took my writing back to a very kind of elemental and almost abstract place.
My process is very deliberative and slow. I think it's in sync with my personality. I'm not comfortable moving in and out of a space with great rapidity. I think that part of me searches for a degree of kind of calm, and that calm necessitates time and conferral, and also deferring to what an individual in their place knows about their lives that I don't know, and then the moment when they're willing to share it. Similarly, I don't think that the strongest portraits are born of a moment wherein one imposes themselves on the person photographed. I think that the strongest photographs that I know of have really been about receptivity, perhaps, but not about imposition. And I think that they are in very great degree collaborative in nature in that regard.
That speaks to the kind of respect he has for that encounter between one person and another. And that influenced actually the way I approached my text in response to his images, which is that there's a lot of hesitation. In fact, the opening passages of the text are sort of all about darkness and advancing into the light tentatively. It's about silence and asking questions about how can you even speak to this? Are words necessary? So it's founded in a kind of doubt about what is possible to say. So that what is then said is said very carefully and fiercely but tentatively, you know, because the atmosphere created by the pictures also has to be respected.
I had worked in the Somali community in the early 90s and returned in 2000 to make a more extended piece about the women and children who had been living on the border of a country, you know, that my father was born in, Kenya. And yet the waves of attention to the issue had faded away in the intervening years, albeit with nearly now a decade of people living in that space. And at the end of one day, this woman came to me and she said, tomorrow I want to meet you with my son. And she arrived at the office where we were to meet, and the son, who was a teenager, had drafted for her a letter. And the letter was about not only what the women and children had endured within the camps, but the complexities of their lives back home. These were camps that were 80% women and children. Now I've entrusted to Teju that image to pair with a kind of text that he finds poignant and essential.
The stranger has already come too close. The stranger is in my face. The stranger, then, is not simply the one whom we have not yet encountered, but the one whom we have already encountered or already faced. The stranger comes to be faced as a form of recognition. We recognize somebody as a stranger rather than simply failing to recognize them. Sarah Ahmed, Strange Encounters. I think there's a great possibility for people to sit with it and feel a sort of calmness of spirit. However, it is a deeply political book. It is tough in places, and I think it is uncomfortable in places.
We ask ourselves, what is the role of the artist in contemporary society? And certainly one of the main roles has to be to interrogate the substantive issues of our time.
We hope that, you know, people go through the text, and it is a sense of discovery, but it's also a sense of, this is familiar. In the specific sense of, you look at some people's faces and you think, I know you. There's no way you don't know them, but you know them because they are part of you. It's saying, you know this. You know, every page is saying, you actually know this already.
Pictures do not speak. Silence is one of their preconditions. And how much more is this silence when the picture is of someone who might speak, but doesn't? Someone who might face us, but chooses to do otherwise. Silence becomes the activity of the picture itself, its charge. A shrouded head turned away. A silence made visible.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.